Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight-up conversations with me, Moshe Popek. This week's guest is Nissim Black. He grew up as a gang member, became a gangster rapper, and ultimately a faith seeker. He's an African-American Hasidic Jew with a hip-hop message of hope and healing. Hi, Nissim. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So I want to roll back a little bit, talk a little bit about your childhood. You were born Damian Black and grew up in Seattle. Tell us a little bit about that story.
So I grew up, you know, like any typical kid growing up in the urban neighborhood, what we call the hood environment. I was exposed to a lot of violence and drug abuse at an early age. I myself got started very early. I was already smoking pot by the time I was 9. By the time I was 12, I was already dealing and running with definitely the wrong crowd, for sure. I found myself running with the street gang, Gangsta Disciple Nation, and, you know, getting in trouble was a typical kid. By the time I think I was 13, I was already expelled from the school district. And I was not allowed into the Seattle public schools. And the best thing that they could possibly do was put you in an alternative school where there's a bunch of other kids that were also expelled from the rest of the, you know, I only picked up more tricks after that. So hip hop was obviously a love of mine from the beginning. Both my mother and my father pioneered rap in Seattle. They were both a part of the first hip hop groups. And so I think that was just honestly something that was in me. So I think I recorded my first record when I was around 13 with the producer Vitamin D. And also around that same year, I was taken to a hip hop program that happened to be at a place called the Union Gospel Mission.
I mean, listening to this story is really just blowing my mind. Somewhere along all this chaos, you discovered Christianity.
Prior to this point, the only real like faith I really knew about was Islam because my grandfather was a Sunni Muslim. So I would pray with him 5 times a day, and eventually he ended up in prison where he was for the rest of his life. Being at this place, it really helped me, and it came at a critical time because I was headed down a very, very dark path, you know. It was a very, very important and critical time that I started going to this hip-hop program at this Christian center. And, you know, I think they caught me right at the right in the nick of time, you know. And I ended up going to a camp with them and end up, you know, committing my life at that point to Christianity. Fast forwarding a little bit, you know, my hip hop thing has sort of taken off even more by the time my 11th grade year. And there was a record label who was really interested in me. And so that the only thing was, is that they really wanted gangster rap. So I wasn't really doing too much gangster rap because it wasn't the lifestyle that I was living at that time. And so, you know, I conformed, seeing a lot of zeros on that contract. But at the same time, I was very, very aware and cognizant. I had already knew that even by the time I started personifying this gangster thing and even losing myself in it, I knew there was a clock going on upstairs. I knew it was ticking. And I knew that God had a big purpose for me. And no matter how much I ran or acted like, you know, I was something else, I knew that eventually he was either going to pull the plug one way or another. I was just hoping that I was able to get out on time, you know?
Did you think, I was just wondering if you, because I, you know, I'm feeling that the Christianity, you were able to get back into school. Did you feel that kind of rap helped you stay off the streets somewhat? I know that later, you know, I mean, it seems like that's kind of what happened there.
Absolutely. Music distracted a lot of things in my life. It definitely distracted me from being in the streets. Along with that also too was football. I was very big into football. I started, you know, football also to that 9th grade year. Was my first year back after, you know, not being able to play Little League for a little bit because all the trouble and stuff I was getting into. So I started football again. So I had a lot of distractions. And then now, you know, being with this group, now I had Bible study groups, you know, so I had a full schedule that kept me pretty busy.
And it seems that, you know, just hearing your story, right? So your parents dealing drugs. I know also, just thinking about the impact, your mom passed away when she was 37. I mean, right. how did that impact you?
I mean, I think it made me emotionally just numb. I was paralyzed a little bit after it, you know. I mean, I was completely broken. My mother up until that point was really like my best friend. So losing her was like losing my world. I think the biggest benefit at that time was the fact that I had already met the love of my life. My wife I met in high school already. And I think by the time my mother passed away, her and I had already been dating for a couple years. And so the way it was orchestrated, she sort of just slid into that best friend, you know, spot for me. And she dropped everything, my wife, and came to live with us and whatever. So she definitely took away some of that sting, but there's no way to describe just that pain and trying to figure out what it is, you know, even though you want to be a person of faith and just accept everything.
Yes.
It's like seeing people 50, 60, and they still had their parents. And I was 19 and I had already lost my mother. You can't plan for that.
But I want to let you know something is that many people we've had on the show and many people that I know personally, there's always that point. They're very sensitive and they go numb. But from that is kind of a rebirth. And you have this enlightenment, this period, this period of growth. But I want to just for a second, Sunni Muslim, right? And then Christianity. And somehow, I guess, together with your wife in 2009, you decide to take steps to convert to Judaism. What was the decision there? Right?
Well, I think the biggest thing was, you know, some of these things are the makeup of your soul. You know, I had a soul that will not find itself satisfied until it digs up every single thing it could dig up in one particular area, right? Yes. And so I think that what it is I sort of have a quest for authenticity. How do I get back to the root? How do I get to the deepest root that I could possibly get to? And then I stayed home and I started praying. And then all of a sudden, you know, there were a series of things that made me go, let me pick back up my Bible again. You know, it's been a while. Let me dust it off. So I started going through it. And then I started realizing things. Even by the time I got to the New Testament, I started realizing how Jewish it was. Right. And I started realizing how foreign a lot of the things that were in there, and obviously a lot of research online and different things like that. But I think it became very clear to me that both Islam and Christianity pointed at Judaism as the father of their faith. So I started going towards that direction. It was really just like a natural progression of studying all these faiths, all three of these, 8 hours a day, going through all these different texts, and everything was pointing back to Har Sinai.
Right, turning back every stone, and just fast forwarding to today, right, 6 children, and you made a choice also to move to Israel. How's life today for you? Kind of living in Israel with the children, how's that going?
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's, as we say, Machaya. It is life itself, really. To be here, it's like, you know, the stones talk to you over here. You know what I mean? And there's every stone has a story. Everything that's laid here, every blade of grass, you know, you see olive trees. You wonder how long it's been around, what it saw when it was here. So it's very much so feels like at home for us. There's definitely no doubt about it. It's been some bit of a struggle and culture shock, no doubt about it. You know, I come from a place where, you know, you could stare at somebody and God forbid lose your life. And over here, it's like a family event, you know, so some things you have to culturally get over. But I definitely have enjoyed being here. And as a person who gets to travel a lot, trust me, there's no place like it.
Have you been traveling a lot now over these past few months during COVID?
Yeah, I actually just got off a tour now. So I was away for 2 weeks, primarily on the East Coast, had one show on the West Coast also. And came back actually this week. I have a concert in Budapest, and then I'm going off from Budapest to the Ukraine, and then I'm coming back. So traveling has picked back up for me.
I always love, I mean, music is my passion. How do you feel that it, in essence, brings people together? I mean, it seems...
I think that music, I mean, it's been said before, but it's no doubt about it that it is the universal language, you know? I see it from people who message me and write me. I have people who send me messages from, you know, from Saudi Arabia, from, you know, from all over the place, really. People that you would never think of. I tell you, I pulled up here living in Israel. I remember pulling up to my driveway one day, hearing rap, you know, coming from, you know, the workers who were outside, all Palestinian. And I get closer and closer and they were listening to me. They got out, took selfies with me and everything else. Like, you know, it breaks down all barriers. I don't know how they feel or what they feel, but they obviously were a fan of my music. And it has been nonstop, that type of love that you would see that things that would seem as though, no, aren't we against each other? Aren't we not supposed to be getting along? And yet we're able to bond over something that is that goes above time, space, and matter, honestly.
Because I think, you know, it's saying that not just music is my passion, but I love to. I live here in Miami, and I was talking to some friends, kind of the idea of a unity concert where it's people from all backgrounds, artists from all backgrounds, and put on a kind of festival with artists that have that unity message. And the more we could do, especially now, there's polls that are going around how divisive, you know, it seems listening to the media, but, you know, we want to be the reverse of that because we're humans and we want to connect with each other. That's the, we're social beings. So, so the more of that we can do, the more will be a better world. You recently came out with a new album as well.
Now, I recently came out with a new song. I had the Hava song that I released, and we just finished up now the new album. And we're going to start slowly leaking singles over the next few months. So I'm very, very excited about that. Just because it's probably going to be the expected unexpected, you know what I mean? I'm really getting the opportunity to like play around in the studio. Since COVID forced me to put one in my house, you know what I mean? I just like have no limitations on what may happen or come out of this place. So it's been really, really awesome. So you're going to start seeing new songs, new videos, and I can't wait to see. It's so deep, so much more Panini, so much more digging into these places that you and I, you know, been speaking about.
Sure. And I mean, the process, it seems to me you got to be extremely, like you talk about authenticity, but when you're putting together new music, you probably have to go to places. I mean, what gives you that inspiration when you're putting together an album or a song? Where do you kind of journey to?
I think my biggest inspiration comes from my meditation and I go out. I have places I go to and I meditate in the fields. You know, this is what I do. I go and talk to God amongst nature. And in that place, when most beautiful thing about that, when a person enters into the world of prayer, they're not like dibbling on the door, but you enter into the actual room and you go past another room and another, you get to this place in this very special room called honesty. And when you get to honesty, you start to speak things that are the deepest things that we have so many layers to us as human beings that we never even dig into or never speak about. We deal with ourselves even on a very superficial level. But once you go in very exposed to God, the music and the ideas and the thoughts that come out of that place are just unmatched. So I think that's where I get a lot of my inspiration from. And I would say for every song that, you know, I've recorded over the last, you know, I don't know how long I've been working on this, last few months or whatever, has been very much so coming from that place.
I love that you have the courage to do that. It's not so often because it could be tough, but you have to build it up. I'm sure from your earlier life experiences, it built you, it gave you the foundation to go to these places and have the ability to journey.
Right. Absolutely.
If you could see, just like kind of an idea, any artist or concert you could ever see, who would you love to see And yeah,
if I could see the person live,
yes.
I definitely, apart from, you know, Michael Jackson is a cheat, so I wouldn't say Michael Jackson.
It's good.
But I definitely would have loved to see James Brown live.
Wow.
I would have loved to picture James Brown live and see what that would have looked like and felt like, you know. He was doing it in a time where there were, you know, now today we get up, we have all these pyrotechnics and we have explosions, CO2 jets and sprinklers and these guys did it without all of that. So, you know, turn the lights on and let them go. So I would have loved to see that type of charisma on stage.
I remember my favorite experience. So Bono comes out, Sunday Bloody Sunday, right? The Edge is playing the guitar, right? Uh-huh. Where I'm pretty sure it was the Meadowlands. So just jean jacket, ripped jeans, comes up t-shirt.
Wow.
Literally just his energy. Everybody in unison, they got the lighters, right? Everyone's up, lights are out.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't sing a word. His microphone is just held to the crowd. But that oneness, I get chills now. I'm telling you, I'm thinking about it right now. But that oneness of that energy comes from someplace special. And,
oh, for sure.
And
for sure.
And that would be my favorite. If alive today, if you can do a duet or you can sing with another artist, Who would that be?
These are all very good questions that I have not been asked yet.
We gotta go that way, right? Yeah.
I would say probably I would probably say Kanye West.
Yeah.
I'd probably say Kanye West.
I love it.
I know Kanye's like crazy and unpredictable, but he's the type of guy that I would love to be in a studio with and just vibing off his energy and watching him work. You know, I think he's like a musical genius and somebody that musically I've looked up to for many years. So
probably one of the most misunderstood artists. I mean, obviously he has a sneaker line and his fashion, all that he's doing, so people seem to understand him, and then judgment, but he's able to somehow energetically just get past that. And I would just also love to just, I'm a layperson, but love to hang out with him, for sure. You know? And also, I know you have, and I love the name, Hava Whiskey. I know you got a whiskey brand, right?
Yeah, for sure. Hava Whiskey is, it's not just a drink, it's happiness in a bottle. For anybody that knows how to hold their liquor, it's happiness in the bottle. Anybody that doesn't, no bottle would be happy for them. But yeah, it's a very, very good, unique black and whiskey here and made here in Israel in the Golan Heights. And it's very, very tasty. So in between, I have that. I also have a podcast myself called The Deal. So between when I'm off the stage, I'm selling whiskey and doing a podcast.
That's great, and congratulations on that. And now you're starting the second season of your podcast. So,
yes,
want to wish you the best of luck for that. And
thank
I also
you.
I want to commend you on your give to Israel. Helping the citizens of Israel on their weathering through COVID. So
thank you so much.
Any help we can do to help people is a great thing. And
thank you.
And so Nisim, I want to say thank you so much. And how can the audience find out more, learn more about you?
Well, the one stop center is NisimBlack.com. Going there, and from there to on Twitter, it's Nisim Black @NisimBlack. On Instagram, it's @NisimOfficial, and also Nisim Black, I think, on TikTok. But you know, watch out over there. Get a little silly sometimes, but
yeah.
That's pretty much how you find me.
Well, thank you so much, Nisim. Really a pleasure. Hopefully I'll be in Israel. Hopefully you'll be in Miami, right? I'm in Miami.
Right.
You know, and it was really, really great. Thank you. Blessings.
Right. Thank you.
Blessings.
Thank you
so much.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator Podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. And we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.